That's the 10th annual dinner tribute to the families of political prisoners and prisoners of war. January 15th from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Bed-Stuy Restoration Plaza, 1368 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. For more information, call 718-949-5153. That's 718-949-5153.
Seven o'clock straight up. You're listening to radio station WBAI New York. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. And actually, we weren't even supposed to be here tonight. We were told that the hearings were going to go on a little bit longer. But guess what? They didn't. And we are here. In fact, we might even be here for longer, depending on if other people at the station believed what they were told. Of course, I'm a skeptic, so whenever somebody tells me you're preempted, I believe that I'm on. And when someone tells me that I'm on, I believe I'm preempted. So it's a healthy way to be around here. In any event, we have a full cast of characters here tonight. Over there is Jim.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi.
Redbird.
Good evening.
And Walter.
Hey.
And, well, I want to do Slick Zero, too. He's new here.
Hello.
Those are the first words you've ever said on the radio, right? Okay.
Or low.
All right, you sit back and bask in that for a little while, and maybe if you have something else to say later, just raise your hand or something like that. And, of course, Bernie joins us from Philadelphia.
Good evening from Philadelphia.
It's been an exciting day. I've been watching the hearings a little bit. Boy, the fisticuffs with Kennedy and Spector there. It's kind of fun.
If you're into that.
I guess nobody else watched it. Huh?
Well,
the only one.
Kennedy proved he can't take a body blow, and Spector worked the body.
I don't know what that even means. I don't think I
well, if you're
into
fisticuffs, you understand.
All right. Well, we have a lot of news of our own, and if we are on for longer, we'll certainly be able to take more phone calls and talk about more things in depth like we like to do every week. We always come out of here saying, boy, you know, it's too bad we didn't get to talk about that because it was really interesting. Of course, when people tell you that you're definitely not going to be on, you don't really prepare as full a show as normally, so it might sound like we don't have as much material, but we do. We really do.
And we're masters at filling.
Yeah, we certainly are. Just now, we filled 3 minutes without saying a damn thing.
Bob and weave and vamp with the best of them.
Yeah. Okay, so now the story that really seems to be everywhere, I don't know if you guys have noticed this too, phone records. Phone records are for sale all of a sudden. Have you guys noticed this? Every newspaper has something about this. Apparently, you can go to websites and click a few buttons and insert your credit card number or something like that, and you can get information on someone's cell phone. You can get all the calls that they make in the last month. You can get a name of an unlisted phone number. You can get an address of a phone number. You can get all sorts of things like that. Bernie, have you been following this?
I have, and it doesn't surprise me.
What surprises me is the blatancy of it. That they can just simply go out there and say, okay, we'll give you all the numbers that this person called on their cell phone. And they're just doing it. It sounds like something that should be illegal, but apparently there's some kind of a loophole.
I don't know about the loophole. I would imagine it's illegal, or at least against the policies of the carriers. But this happened to me several years ago with just my wireline at the time, Bell Atlantic. Someone purloined my billing records, and it was just social engineering tactics they used.
Well, social engineering, that of course, is just simply making up a story and getting somebody to tell you something that they're not supposed to tell you. That's as old as the hills. We've always had the ability to go out there and simply get a phone company to give us information. But this seems so systematic that it's a business. Literally, businesses are being run that do this. And I'm sure we can come up with a few websites that are out there.
It reminds me of the businesses that were set up to spoof caller ID for a price.
Yeah, but yeah. Except, you know, that's really not illegal. At least I don't think that should be illegal. You simply...
No, but it's interesting in the sense that some people were able to do it and others weren't, and then all of a sudden the people who weren't able to do it can pay for it.
Uh-huh. One site is called locatecell.com, and for $110, they will provide you with the outgoing calls from a cell phone for the last billing cycle, up to 100 calls. I imagine there's probably another fee to pay if you want to get more than that. You have to supply the name, address, and number. Interesting that you have to supply the address as well. You get results within hours. It's kind of scary, isn't it?
100 calls is really not.
It's not. No,
most people make more than it.
They're cleaning up. They are cleaning up. But what I've heard is that the same privacy protection does not apply to wireless phone companies as it does to wired phone companies.
Well, we don't really have privacy protections in this country, so I'm not surprised at all. A lot of European countries have laws that make it illegal to share personal information without the authorization of the person whose information you're sharing. In the United States, the information is owned not by the person it's about, but by the company that collected it, and it can therefore be sold all over the place, with the exception of health records.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really unsurprising.
Well, according to security officials at Verizon Wireless, there are probably 100 such sites, and Jeffrey Nelson, a company spokesman, said Verizon is always trying to respond to abusive practices. He said the company views all such activity as illegal and that we have historically and will continue to change policies to reflect the changing nature of criminal activity. Meanwhile, the spokesperson for Singular Wireless, Mark Siegel, said his company constantly is on guard against people trying to get customer information, but he called the acquisition of call records an infinitesimally small problem at his firm. Now, there's a couple of ways to read that. Either it's something that doesn't happen to them or something they really don't care about.
It may be an infinitesimally small problem for his firm, but I'm sure it could be an immense problem for the person whose records are being obtained.
Absolutely.
It doesn't take much. I'll leave it as an exercise for the listener to figure out what could go wrong if someone has the record of the last 100 calls you made on your cell phone. An ex-wife or ex-husband, someone stalking you, someone going after you for a debt, someone going after you for criminal reasons, either yours in the past or theirs in the future. I mean, the list could be endless.
What I'm curious about is where are they getting the information from specifically? Who's providing it to them?
Well, that's something that I think would be amazingly simple for them to figure out if they really do care about this. All they have to do is go to this website themselves and put in one of their phone numbers and then see who calls to get information about it or how information might be gotten. From. Is a website of theirs accessed? Does somebody get a phone call from somebody pretending to be somebody else? Or do they just already have access to everything like, you know, maybe law enforcement or private investigators have?
I'm sort of wondering if some of these websites are also just scams where they take your credit card and don't provide you the information in question.
Well, according to reporters that have been reporting on this story, they've tested it themselves and they've gotten their own cell phone information. So I would imagine, unless it's some vast conspiracy, that there is something to this. Now, that's not to say that there aren't going to be 100 or 1,000 imitation sites that don't give you anything and just take your credit card number, but that's the nature of the Internet anyway.
Yeah, I just don't. The information was that there are hundreds of sites that are doing this, and I find it perfectly credible that there would be a few people who have the connections to set something like this up, but hundreds sounds like either the cell phone companies have serious problems with security on their hands, or at least some of the sites are scams.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I do know that private investigators are able to get this information legitimately, quote unquote. Now, all it takes is one corrupt private investigator or one corrupt cop or somebody who has, again, quote unquote, legitimate access to this, simply going into business or being anonymous and sharing information with someone else. And all of a sudden, there's no privacy anymore. So in a way, I think this is good because it opens people's eyes to what is out there and what certain people can get. Like, you know, cops can look up anything on anybody. If they see a license plate go by, they can get all the information about the person. It's important to know that this can be done. So now we know this can be done. The question is, what's the reaction going to be?
I think I can tell you what the reaction won't be, and that's blaming the companies whose fault this is. if we're lucky, go after the operators of these websites, but I find it highly unlikely that there will be any penalties for the companies who are disclosing people's data so wantonly.
Is it at all possible that these sites are actually a hidden part of the cell phone companies?
Well, what possible
an extra source of income?
I don't really think they even the cell phone companies are that sleazy, but it's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, this disinformation is provided to private investigators already. So why would it be the phone company's fault if a PI was going into business for his own selling the information that he has access to?
Well, the question is, should that access be available in the first place, even to private investigators? Are phone calls something that should be kept confidential?
Why hasn't this happened with landlines? Why only cell phones?
Yeah, it's interesting. That's why I think it's got something to do with the fact that there is no legislation covering wireless phone calls, which I'm not even sure is true. This is what several reports have indicated. But if you look at these sites, invariably they don't have the information on at least local phone calls. I have seen some long-distance phone companies that apparently are easy to get as well. So I don't know. It's anybody's guess as to just why they seem to focus on cell phones more. Bernie, any theories down there?
I have no theories. I just think it's companies using a pure capitalism to buy and sell a product. I mean, people are astonished that illegal drugs are available on every street corner, but they're readily available, so I hear. So, you know, this should be no different. If there's a demand, there will be a supplier.
Yeah, well, the real question, though, is how are they getting the information in the first place? And do you think there'll be some kind of a law drawn up in the next week or something that will prevent this kind of thing from happening?
No, I think there are just people at cell phone companies that aren't being paid much of a living wage and are willing to compromise their integrity and sell these records to anybody willing to pay for them.
Oh, so you think it's cell phone, corrupt cell phone employees that are behind this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, there's got to be a way to guard against that. If you simply log when people access a customer's cell phone records, and then if that person complains, you know exactly who it was that released the information.
How do people know if this has happened to them, though? How do people go out and find this out and complain?
That's a good point. The person who gets it is probably not going to tell you that he did it, is he?
Yeah, in general, what kind of recourse do people have in this country if their privacy has been, violated?
I think it would be interesting for one of us to try this on one of our accounts and then call up the company and ask them when the last time the record has been accessed, because I know they generally do log when the record was last accessed by an employee. So if it is the case where an internal employee is leaking this information, then it may be possible to see, okay, well, if we requested this information last week and you know, my account was also accessed last week, then it's an internal sort of job.
You're saying we should spend $110 and
I don't really think it's worth $110 to find this out.
Yeah, well, I don't think you get to bargain about that. That's pretty much the going rate right now.
When I call my wireless carrier, Sprint PCS, and they ask for my credentials, I gotta give them my name and my secret password. It's clear to me that the person on the other end of the line can read my password. It's not something they're typing in.
Oh, I've had interesting experiences with that where I've purposely changed one or two digits and the person's like, oh, you're close, or something.
Yep.
Like you're just a couple off, or you know, a comment like that, and it's very obvious that it's something on their screen that they're just comparing what you say to.
And my password is not phonetic. In other words, when I read it, it's not as one would type it. So I pronounce it that way, and they always say, yep, that's it. So I know they're not typing it. So, you know, clearly the customer service reps at least Sprint and probably other wireless carriers can have full access to your account information without ever having to really talk to you from a technical standpoint. So that indicates that they have the information and can readily sell it.
It's scary, though, but it's also, like I said, an education, because you see the information that's out there, you see the ease with which it's able to be obtained, and just like a cop can look up any private information on someone he's stalking, so can an employee at a phone company, and it's just very important to educate people about that. There might not be anything that actually can be done other than educating people and maybe seeing which companies have worse security than others.
No, I don't agree with that assessment. There are certainly things that could be done. And I can come up with technical solutions. I don't know if they'd work or not, but I can tell you who does know, and it's the carriers.
Mm-hmm.
And if a law were passed to make it a crime to have systems where this information could be released, the cell phone companies would find these technical measures and implement them in a hurry.
But how do you guard? How do you guard against one person at a phone company giving out information they're not supposed to give out?
You can construct a system where the employee can't access the information unless he's on the phone with the customer.
Okay, but if he says he believes that he's on the phone with the customer, how do you get around that?
You can statistically analyze which employee has done this more than once or twice and draw inferences. I mean, I'm not saying my suggestions will work unmodified, the ones that I came up with in the past minute,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sure that there's a technical solution. And if the cell phone companies, you know, had the threat of $1 million fine hanging over their heads, they would spend $500,000 to implement these systems.
And you can bet they'd spend even more money than that to lobby against any such legislation ever being enacted.
Well, that's the problem.
Probably true. Again, we'd like to hear from our listeners on this. If you've been victimized, or if you have any theories, or if you've done it yourself, please write to us, oth@2600.com, or you can call us a little bit later. We'll be taking some phone calls. Another story that's been making the rounds, this is kind of a funny, well, maybe not funny if you're the person involved, but it's funny to us. A Stark County high school senior has been arrested and charged for allegedly trying to crash his school's computer system. Police say the student created a website which connected to the school's system. I love these technical stories in newspapers. This comes from WKYC Channel 3 in... I don't even know what state this is. It's Uniontown, Stark County. Where are these places? I have no idea. And they don't say on their website because they assume everybody knows where they are. Oh, well. Anyway, when enough users logged on and hit the F5 button, it overloaded the school's system. But Lake High School caught on before the system crashed. Its computers started slowing down. It's a crime, and it is important we take this seriously, especially for school officials. It could have done a tremendous amount of damage, said Canton City Prosecutor Frank Francione. Michael Stone, 18 years old, is charged with a felony and could face jail time, but prosecutors say community service is more likely and disciplinary action from the school.
What I got out of
Wait, that's not even a sentence. Community service is more likely and disciplinary action from the school. My God, this is somebody who writes for a living coming up with sentences like that.
It's a sentence that's said on the air, so on the air it's not as bad as...
Well, I said it on the air and it felt horrible.
Okay, we're illiterate, so... Yeah.
Redbird.
It's just interesting that out of all the technical details that were presented in that article, it seems like a bunch of kids refreshed a web page at the same time.
Well, okay, the F5 key basically does what?
If you're in a browser, would generally speaking, refresh the page.
Okay, some people might not know that. Hit the F5 key, that's what it does. It basically just refreshes all browsers or just certain browsers?
Most browsers that anybody would be using.
So the web page this person created must have told people to hit the F5 key or something?
That's what it sounds like.
I don't understand what kind of web page is a school running where if you hit F5 enough times, it's going to crash the system.
It's a poor man's denial of service attack.
It sure is. Wow.
Theoretically, any web page could cause a server to crash by enough millions and billions of people hitting F5. If you have the school, I'm sure, does not expect to get an awful lot of traffic. So if it's got, 40 people viewing this one web page, and on the web page it says, for a good time, hit F5.
Uh-huh.
Well, or set up some kind of a contest where it has a page count of how many times you've refreshed and... the highest number wins.
I'll tell you what, if we can figure out where this place is, we can simply give out the address of that high school website and they'll have F5s going forever. I mean, this is insane. Bernie, can you believe this? A felony for this?
I've heard just as bad, personally.
Well, I know you have, but I mean, at least you had, plastic explosive in your basement, or so they thought. Dental putty, and you had crystals, and, I don't know, you were talking to black people in a parking lot of 7-Eleven. That's, in Pennsylvania, that's a crime right there. But this guy simply created a web page and told people to hit F5, and that's a felony?
Well, according to the prosecutors, they think it is. I think they need a quick education in internet technology, which I think any junior high schooler would be happy to give them.
Yeah. Well, I think this might be in Ohio because I'm seeing that it's the Akron Canton News. Is there a Canton in Ohio?
Yeah, there's a Canton.
Okay, so this is probably in Ohio. So if you can find the Stark County High School webpage, we have some fun for them to experience. But boy, yeah, it's so typical, isn't it, of how people view technology? You know, do something we don't understand, and they can actually charge someone with a felony.
I mean, it's clear that among the people who don't understand is the reporter here.
Oh, yeah. Can't even string a sentence together, but certainly doesn't understand the technology involved.
The sad thing about this is that the student is likely to get blamed for this, what amounts to a distributed denial of service attack, albeit one that's manually implemented by lots of people hitting F5 on their keyboard. They're going to be blamed for all these people hitting F5 that heard of the case because of the prosecutor's action.
And probably... Yeah, people who are figuring out what the web page is now and going there because we told them to. Yeah, it's all going to fall on this poor kid's head.
Because the prosecutor decided to take this thing public when it was just a very silly prank, if anything.
I don't even know if it qualifies as a prank. It's creating a web page, for God's sake. It's just... What kind of web pages are these people creating? What kind of software or bandwidth do they have where they can't handle a few people hitting a web page? It's really very silly. I mean, you know, we've been slashdotted and we've survived that. This probably comes nowhere near a comparison of that many hits, and they crash. It's just sad. Okay, this is interesting. We talked about the eavesdropping scandal a few weeks ago. The NSA eavesdropping on Americans. At the behest of President Bush, bypassing all the laws, bypassing even the Patriot Act, bypassing even the secret courts. and believe it or not, most Americans think that's just fine. A poll of 1,003 adults found that 50% of those polled believe it's okay to forego warrants when ordering electronic surveillance of people suspected of having ties to terrorists abroad. Another 46% said the policy is wrong, and 4% said they really don't care. The poll was conducted Friday through Sunday. I'm speechless.
It's not even surprising, just because of most people I've spoken with and their reaction to it, which is simply, if you don't have anything to hide, then why do you care?
Well, why bother having any laws at all then? Why not just give these people carte blanche to go around and investigate anybody they feel like investigating, because if they feel like investigating them, they must be suspected of something, right?
It does kind of contradict a basic principle that the country was founded on. I'm not sure why people aren't worried about that.
They don't know the Constitution. They don't know the Federalist Papers. So for most people, it's totally irrelevant, immaterial, and unknown to them. So don't worry about them not knowing that this is contradictory to our basic tenets. They don't know what our basic tenets are.
Well, I think it's about time that we had some schooling on the basic tenets of our country here, because they certainly are in danger. This is these are very scary times.
And the argument about not having something to hide, 20 years from now, when you're a teenager now, for example, 20 years from now, you're in your mid-30s, you're applying for some sort of job, perhaps you're before the Senate in Supreme Court hearings to be confirmed to the Supreme Court. They'll bring up what happened 20 years ago. It may have been legal then, but now, 20 years later, it's very bad, very, very bad. So when they say you have nothing to hide, well, maybe at this moment it's nothing to hide. 20 years from now, it might be enough to hang you. That's what I don't like about this argument.
Well, that's another aspect to it, I suppose. Moving over to the United Kingdom, which is not exactly the bastion of freedom anymore either. Get this. This is something. This will leave you speechless, as it left me. A UK court on Monday severely penalized a motorist for the crime of showing disrespect to a mobile speed camera van. I could not make this up. The device had photographed Sean Tohill, I also can't make up these names, 21 years old, Tohill, driving 22 miles an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone.
That's un-American.
Well, yeah, okay, fine.
Okay.
But they still use miles, too. Police became enraged when they noticed he had given the camera a V sign. It's funny, they have a picture of Winston Churchill giving the same B sign.
That's generally speaking a good sign.
Well, yeah. No, actually over there it's the same thing as the middle finger.
Oh.
In England. So if you really want to get somebody angry over there, that's what you do.
My mistake.
Yeah. Actually, I think you have to do it this way.
Right.
The opposite of what Churchill's doing.
Don't do that on the radio.
The people in the radio don't know the difference between this way and that way.
Well, I'll do it this way, I'll do it this way, I'll do all the different ways I feel
and
like
you,
doing
it. If you haven't seen that, call us up later, we'll do it again.
The FCC is welcome to investigate. Okay, but if you invert the V and do it, I guess with your knuckles facing outwards, is that better? Okay, nice. That's what this person did. Police became enraged when they noticed that he had done that to the camera. Officers were dispatched to his home 2 days later to present charges, which the Cupar Sheriff Court in Fife, Scotland, upheld on Monday. The court suspended Toehill's right to drive for a year and imposed a 90-pound fine. That's about $160. Toehill, who is a North Sea oil worker, told the London Telegraph, "I can't believe that speed cameras can be used in this way. I thought they were to catch speeding drivers." He plans to appeal the ruling, but oh my God.
I find it interesting that these cameras are monitored that often where they actually caught this guy doing that.
Well, now we know they're monitored. Actually, you know, the United Kingdom is very big on cameras that they watch. I've told this story before where in Piccadilly Circus, somebody was standing on this fountain where there was a statue, and unbeknownst to everybody, apparently there are cameras in the statue. So this person is drunk, standing on top of the fountain or next to the fountain, and all of a sudden this voice comes out of a speaker saying, "Come down from there." And it was just so very 1984 Orwellian prisoner-ish, Teletubbies, you know, whatever you have. The British are just into loudspeakers and cameras and things barking out commands to you from unknown places. So I guess I'm not that surprised, but my God, they really don't have anything to do over there if this is what they're penalizing people for.
I wonder what he was charged with.
Well, what it said was, what was it, insult? Showing disrespect to a mobile speed camera van. That reminds me of disrespecting the flag, one of the charges in Pennsylvania that you were familiar with.
Yes. Well, what I was charged with was statutorily equivalent in penalty to that, but I ended up doing a lot of time.
Actually, it was
anyway.
Insulting the flag. You did not insult the flag, though.
No, I didn't. It was just a misdemeanor too that involved no victims, and that was one of the only that and scattering rubbish were the only two other offenses I could find in the PA Crimes Code that were equivalent in severity to what I was charged with doing. So anyway,
amazing.
You know what else the British are into,
which is
body scanning.
Body scanning.
Body scanning at the Paddington Station in London. There's a high-tech body scanner for detecting would-be terrorists.
Uh-huh.
And there will be a 4-week trial in which passengers will be randomly selected to pass through the 7-meter box at the Heathrow Express platforms, while baggage is also screened, and there will then be further trials at other mainline and tube stations.
Now, okay, when you say bodies are being scanned, how thoroughly are they scanning?
It's not really clear. I couldn't find any pictures of the scanning, but apparently it's thorough enough that they are having only scanner operators of the same gender as the passers through.
I've seen pictures of this.
Wait, how have you seen pictures?
They've been out. Like,
what do you mean they've been out?
This is not new technology.
But no, but the pictures. How are the pictures getting out?
Not of this specific scanner, but of scanners like this. And you basically see the person completely naked.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty bad. But as far as I know, this is still voluntary at that station?
I think there's a 4-week trial, which hasn't started yet, so I think once the trial starts, it won't be voluntary.
Who would volunteer for this? Or is it voluntary to ride the trains, too?
It may be voluntary, maybe like now you can play with it until we start. That's what I get. But there's one particularly worrying sentence. This is the BBC article.
Uh-huh.
It says, "Tests at London's Liverpool station in 2003 led to too many false alarms, but a more sophisticated version is being tested in New York."
Oh, really?
Oh.
Oh, I had no idea. We must find this.
So I don't know if it's a mistake because it's made by an American company and they were, you know, really tired when they wrote the article, but...
No, the BBC doesn't mess up like that.
I don't know.
Sometimes they reveal things they're not supposed to reveal, but they usually reveal the truth.
Well,
there's not
have
an
it.
Endorsement. It just
now,
happens to be.
I have. Do we know where to buy lead suits? Because I think I might want to get one
well,
soon.
Well, I imagine if you would pass through there with a lead suit, they would have some further questions for you. including, will you please remove the lead suit?
How about a lead apron for radiographic purposes? Those are obtainable. Now, my question about these scanners is, and I really don't want anybody to interpret this too much, but supposedly it's to make sure that you're not carrying a weapon anywhere on you, including very close to your genitals or such. What if you're carrying something internally? Do these things spot that?
What do you mean, if you swallow a gun or something?
Well, I was thinking more of Papillon, the Steve McQueen, Dustin Hoffman movie. But, yeah, swallow a gun in pieces and remove it later on.
This is a huge security flaw, Jim.
They're
going to have to improve this so that these things robotically check you out for weapons you may have ingested
Walter,
put somewhere else.
Walter, please give these people no ideas.
There's yet another problem with this system, and that is that it takes 80 seconds to happen.
80 seconds?
Which I can't imagine. I don't have 80 seconds.
You know, because they're all gawking over the people. That's why. Hey, friend, come over here. Take a look at this. Have you ever seen something like that before?
Even the head of the thing, this is the Transport Secretary, Alistair Darling, quoted in the Independent of London, said, "You simply couldn't have people queuing up for hours to get through. You would be doing the terrorist job for them. What you can do is ask yourself whether on a selective basis, at a point where it is appropriate, it could help to make things safer and reduce the risk." So even the person who's in charge of the department that's in charge of the this, that, and the other, the top of the line, says that this is not practical.
You know, every week it just gets crazier and crazier. But thanks, everybody, for sending us stories and links and things like that. We, at Off the Hook, will continue to report on things like that. And, of course, we want to hear from you. OTH@2600.com is our email address. But we also have a snail mail address, which you're welcome to write to us at, with postcards, letters, packages.
More expensive to do it now.
We will x-ray the packages.
We won't, but somebody else might. There's all kinds of things you can send us. Parcels, books, there's no limit.
Posters. Cakes with files?
Yeah, you can't send these things to the Internet. And, of course, you'll need the address. All right? Get ready. The address is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
Walter. No, 10th floor.
What happened? You fell asleep there?
I
All right. We'll have to talk about this later. New York, New York.
10005.
And I was thinking of expanding and getting another line for somebody else.
You're holding us up.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think others can handle this.
I've been doing good up till now.
All right. A mystery sound. We have a mystery sound this week. And, again, people in the studio and Bernie S. on the phone are instructed not to blurt out what the mystery sound is. If our listeners know what it is, they are instructed to call us at 212-209-2900 and tell us what this mystery sound is. Okay, and saying something like beeps and music is not going to be enough. You have to tell us where it's from, where you might have heard it, that kind of thing.
Come on, this one's easy.
I heard it just now.
It's easy for us, but
I mean, it's easy. Look at all the people who are already calling.
Well, you know, it provides
wrong.
A pause in the day's occupation for somebody and thinks they actually got a hard question right.
Extra credit if you can identify.
And most people don't know this, all right? If I went out to the street and just played that on a boombox, nobody would know what I was doing.
I think more people will know it in New York than in, say, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
All right, pick a random number from 1 to 10. That one?
Yeah.
All right. And good evening, you're on.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, it's from the BBC.
Can you be more specific?
The news from the BBC, anytime they start the news, usually they play this music.
Okay, well, I'll accept that. That's close enough. But, you know, they haven't played that music in the last few years, have they?
Yes, I heard it late night, around 3 o'clock.
When?
Time they played.
How long ago?
About a week or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, because, you know, I listened to BBC World Service late night. They broadcast it here in America over public radio, and they play a different theme now.
Because every night I listen to BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from 1 to 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Because I'm a cab driver, you know, I drive late night.
Oh, you're a cab driver?
Yeah, that's why I'm familiar with it.
Wow, okay. Well, I'm going to take your word on that. You driving a cab right now?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a passenger?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to get you in trouble with the passenger, but we know a lot of cabbies listen to us, and it's great to know you're out there.
How do you listen to the BBC in your cab?
He listens to the BBC by listening to public radio between 1 and 6 in the morning, right?
Ah, okay.
My two station is WBAI and NPR. That's the only two station I listen to.
Okay, well, we'll let you go to the other station occasionally, but just make sure you come back here. Just make sure BAI is the number one station.
Yeah, it's the number one.
All right.
I'm a member, too, you know.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. And if he turns his radio up fast, the passenger can hear the 7-second delay and hear his voice, which I guess would be a thrill of some sort. Yes, that is correct. And I guess maybe it was easy for some people.
I don't think we even gave out.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
Bernie. You remember when they used to play the chimes of Big Ben instead of the electronic beats on the BBC?
Well, they used to play the chimes of Big Ben on the quarter hour, the half hour, and the three quarters hour. They used to do that. That was pretty cool, and yeah, I'll never forget the first time I heard that. I was playing with a shortwave radio. I didn't even know it was a shortwave radio. I think I was at my grandparents' house, and they had this huge radio that had names of cities on it. And I was just tuning through. It was late night for me, about 10 o'clock, and I heard this British accent, and they were talking about something that was happening on the day after the day that it was, and I couldn't figure out how they were in the future. And then they started playing all this music and the chimes of Big Ben, and I realized I was actually listening to something from across the ocean. And I don't know if people have the same sense of mystery and intrigue by hearing something so far away anymore. Certainly phone calls don't sound like that. It used to be you made a phone call, it sounded long distance. Calling from Long Island to New York City was long distance, but imagine calling to Alaska or France or something crazy like that. It really sounded far away. Today, everything sounds nearby.
You know, there's something to be said for more primitive technologies giving you a greater love and appreciation of technology. I remember as a kid, most TV stations would be off by 1 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and even radio stations. I remember going upstate in the 60s and 70s to my family's relatives in a small town in western New York called Dunkirk. And all the local radio stations would switch off. There'd be like two stations in Buffalo, and you'd pick up things from 1,000 miles away.
Yeah. Yeah. You still can.
Well, true.
Yeah.
But generally, everything local is still on. You have to search in between. There, you could have it preset to the local station. It goes off at 2 or 3 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and then you suddenly pick up stations weaker, you know, 1,000, 2,000 miles away.
And you get things like skywave interference. AM radio would bounce in from distant cities. In the summertime, VHF TV stations you'd pick up from all different places. I used to pick up Philadelphia and Boston all the time in New York, and I wouldn't be able to get New York. It would just be a mishmash of signals. Now everybody has cable. Everybody has satellite, so they don't experience the thrill of exploring anymore.
As long as they keep paying their bill.
Yeah, as long as they do that.
Well, interestingly enough, I don't have cable, so I pick up 2 Philadelphia stations late at night on my TV.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, there's still stuff to explore.
Oh, I know. Well, tell me what it is.
Well, you could play around on other radio bands and
uh-huh.
get interested like in amateur radio.
Ham radio, for instance.
You could do that.
Well, I have a story about ham radio, in fact. This whole thing was simply to get you to mention ham radio. And you played into it marvelously.
It doesn't take that much to...
No, that's
very
true.
Simple.
Every 10 minutes he says something about ham radio. Anyway, back on May 12th, 2005. I'm reading a letter from actually Joe W2JLH. Do you know him?
No, I don't.
If I said someone's call,
it's possible, but
if I said someone's call signs, you would actually recognize it based on the call sign?
If I knew the person, sure.
Okay.
I know Bernie's call sign. I know everybody who has a license in here.
Is it
only one person?
Is it considered an encroachment on your personal life to give out your call sign?
I could give out my call sign.
Give out your call sign.
K2BAT.
K2BAT. That's kind of cool because it spells out a word.
It's a vanity sign.
Oh, so you had to pay extra for the vanity sign.
It wasn't that much, but yeah.
Wow. Anybody else want to give out their call signs as long as we're in this mode? Walter?
My call sign is KC2OGY.
KC2OGY. I can't help but notice you're both Ks.
There's a reason for that.
Well, obviously the Mississippi River thing doesn't apply to ham radio, where call signs only begin with K west of the Mississippi and W east of the Mississippi, except for ones that were grandfathered, like KYW and KDK and ones like that. So I guess there's no logic whatsoever. Just
no, they're usually assigned in sequential order, and around here it's what KC2, and then like maybe they're still in the O's or something like that. But they're in sequential order.
I see.
And you could apply for vanity signs based on your license class, and you could get shorter ones if you're a lot higher class. And there's all sorts of interesting rules that are probably too complex to get into now. But
okay. And the ham radio world kind of ties into the hacker world rather nicely. We just sort of trade stories and have the same kind of I guess interest in exploring technology and playing with things. Before I continue, anybody else want to give out the call signs?
N3KOW.
Wait, yours begins with an N?
November 3, Kilowatt, Oscar, Whiskey.
How does yours begin with an N?
It just does.
So, WK and N?
WK, N, and there's also A.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know this.
Only amateur extras can get A.
What's an amateur extra?
That's the rank. That's the license class you have.
What does that mean?
You various operators have different license classes depending on the exams that they took.
Okay.
So it goes technician general and then amateur extra.
I see.
And the latter two require Morse code still and theory exams.
You're an amateur, what, generic?
Extra.
Are you an extra?
Yes.
Oh, so you could get an A if you wanted to.
If I wanted to.
I see. Are you an extra, Bernie?
No, I was a general at one time, but now I'm just a technician. I let it expire.
Oh, so you fall down if you let it expire.
That's right.
It's a bad idea to let it expire, but I can see how it could happen.
Walter, what about you? Are you extra?
I just got my license at Dayton, so I'm a technician.
Okay. All right.
It's good. A technician class license lets you operate on all amateur frequencies above 30 megahertz, which is a whole lot of spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have higher class licenses, then you can, which just involves a little more complicated test, and a Morse code requirement, albeit a slow one. You can operate on shortwave frequencies, which are below 30 megahertz. So you can talk to people around the world without any infrastructure.
Well, Walter, have you been operating on any frequencies?
I haven't been operating much, no.
Ah, okay.
I've been listening, but...
All right. Well, I can do that.
Tying into our previous conversation, mm-hmm. The FCC operates a database where you can type these strings of letters and numbers in and learn out all kinds of information about
people. Oh, really?
People. Yeah.
Oh, okay. We should edit that part out then.
Yeah, we should.
you can get our names, and I think me and Bernie use P.O. boxes, and it's not you could be anonymous.
Uh-huh.
Well, fairly anonymous.
But this could be another way your privacy could be invaded.
Have fun.
All right. Then we use Google Earth, and we track you down that way. I was moving all over the place with Google Earth the other day. It's a lot of fun. It really is.
It's a cool technology.
Exploring various countries, just wandering around, looking at houses and streets and cars. And I think I see my car in there, but I'm not sure. Anyway, getting to this story. Back on May 12, 2005, I received a cell phone and use ticket on 23rd Street on the FDR Drive in Manhattan. The hearing was today, and the judge found me guilty. This is how it unfolded. I am so angry, I feel violated, and I feel every amateur radio operator received a ticket today. The officer swore in and explained that he saw me using a cell phone, pulled me over, and explained that I cannot use a cell phone while driving. The judge asked if I wanted to speak, and I said, "Your Honor," after the officer stopped and explained that he was going to give me a ticket for a cell phone in use, I told the officer this was not a cell phone, it's an amateur radio. I explained to the judge that I was a licensed amateur radio operator, handed him my license, also pointed out my license plate was an amateur radio license plate. The judge didn't buy it, I guess that's how it ended. He basically said that he described the mobile radio, made it clear that it was a microphone with a cord held in front of my mouth, and apparently that was enough for him to think that it was the same thing as a cell phone. Joe W2JLH says, "Let's all make noise." I need all the help I can get for this. What do you guys think of that?
I think Bernie, you've mentioned this before, where the law states that it has to be connected to a public switch network, and this is not at all that. This is amateur radio. It's not any sort of in any way connected to the telephone network.
But the spirit of the law is to not have people talking on devices when they're driving.
No, it's not, because you can talk on a handheld device while you drive, and you won't be ticketed. A Bluetooth device, a hands-free handset, those are perfectly legal. So that's not the spirit of the law.
You're saying...
a police officer.
Yeah, well...
Well, to heck with the exceptions for police officers.
Yeah.
They'll throw that... They'll laugh at us in court if we bring that up.
Well, it's very common. Like you said, police officers do it, taxi cab drivers do it, truckers do it. I mean, it's a very... It's.
But you're saying as long as it's plugged into something, that makes it safe?
No, I'm not going to argue the safety thing, because okay. I think we've gone through this
all
enough,
right.
But...
Well, you think the law is written that way, where...
I think the law states that it has to be connected to the switch telephone network, and I don't believe that anything else... I don't think it applies to anything else besides cell phones. If I'm correct in the statement and I don't really know the law, I haven't read it myself.
But if that's the reason why somebody gets out of a ticket, because it's not connected to the public telephone network, is that really the right reason? If they're holding the same kind of device, they're talking to somebody, and if I'm connected to a phone network, I get a ticket. If you're connected to another ham, you don't get a ticket. Is that fair?
Yes, because you can't misinterpret the law like that, and look what happens when
well, yeah, okay, fine. If you want to follow the law by the way it's miswritten, don't you think that's obviously not the spirit of the law in that case?
I don't think there's a single person in Albany who knows the term public switch telephone
yeah,
network.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's a shame.
Why? Let's take some more phone calls. 212-209-2900. If somebody could go out to the lobby and see if there's any personal computer people around. If not, we're going to assume that we're going to go past the hour, and then we have more material to play around with. Our phone number now is 212-209-2900. This is Off the Hook, the show that was not supposed to be on tonight because of the Supreme Court hearings. And we are on. In fact, we might even be on for longer. Taking your phone calls. Anybody in there? Nobody's in there. Okay, so we're going to assume they're going to continue on, and we'll carry on for the personal computer people as if they were here. 212-209-2900, country code 1. And good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead. Speak up.
I got an email about telemarketers and they're calling cell phones and charging against minutes call the do not call list. Could you comment on that?
Well, that's been a problem for a long, long time, where telemarketers call phone numbers without regard to whether or not they're cell phones, and you have to pay for that, because in this country, you pay for incoming cell calls as well as outgoing cell calls.
The email he got is a scam.
Oh,
I'm not familiar with the email. Tell me about the email.
Someone in my office got the same email last week, and he printed it out and gave it to everybody in the office saying, oh, beware of this. And I'm like, listen, this is a scam. I looked it up on Snopes. which is always right, but...
Always.
Sure.
But anyway, this is a known hoax. It was saying that there's a... why don't you read the email you got there, caller?
Well, the caller has left us.
Oh, already?
They come in, they ask a question, and they go out again.
Well, it was sort of a clever scam. It was saying that there was a new law that was passed that was going to create a national telephone directory of cellular phone numbers that telemarketers would have access to unless you called this toll-free number and got yourself on this do not call list. And it's not the do not call list that we were talking about a year or two ago. This is purportedly for cell phones only. Do not call them. But it was a private company you'd be calling, and then they would get your caller ID information or your ANI when you call this toll-free number, and then they would have your cell phone number. So basically, if you follow the instructions of this email, you are exposing your cell phone number to some private company who would likely then sell your number to a telemarketer. So the best thing to do with spam is take no action at all.
Yeah, but there is a concern when you get telemarketing calls to your cell phone, which is one of the other issues of this whole thing, right?
I don't get them.
It made people afraid, and it pushed a hot button for people. But I have never gotten one because it is a crime. It is against FCC regulations to have, I think, Federal Trade Commission regulations to market via cell phones, because the receiver of the call has to pay, and that wouldn't be good.
I guess it's also illegal to call an 800 number. And try to sell them something.
Good question.
I've never gotten any either. My primary cell phone number is fairly public, and there's no...
Well, it's fairly easy. You're what, 201?
Yes.
Okay, for the people in 917 at least, because most numbers in 917 tend to be cell phones or wireless devices or beepers or something like that. So they know to avoid that, but I've heard stories from people in other parts of the country that have gotten a fair number of them, and it is pretty annoying. If a telemarketer doesn't know that they're calling a cell phone, how would they know not to? That's the thing. 60, you had a point?
Yes, recently actually, I had to call this place because they kept spamming me with SMS messages, and I do not have a plan where I pay for it monthly basis, so I was paying like 2 cents or whatever for every message they sent me, so I called them up, left a nice voicemail a couple times, and they took me off the list, but even still, it was quite annoying for the whole 6 cents it charged me.
Well, yeah.
Something to watch out for.
It's people get very annoyed when they get charged for something that, you know, they shouldn't be paying. That they, you know, somebody trying to sell them something and they have to pay for that, they get completely outraged.
An interesting technical question comes to my mind. What happens if you enter your cell phone number into the Do Not Call registry? Anything?
Apparently not. No, I don't. I don't think so.
That dead silence means nothing happens.
Well. I mean, how would you know? How would you know?
Good point.
Yeah. One thing, though. Go ahead, Bernie.
I'm sorry. Did we ever establish if you can migrate a phone number between wireless and wireline for portability?
Allegedly, you can. I've never.
There have actually been articles in the newspaper, I believe the Daily News about 6 months ago, in which someone was having great difficulty doing that and was essentially stonewalled at every turn. I don't know the upshot beyond that, though.
I would like to have a 212 cell phone number. Has anyone done that? That's my dream.
You have such simple dreams.
That's my only dream left, actually. Yeah, it's come down to that. But my main bone of contention here is, when are we going to get to the point where people... Overseas, it works differently. Overseas, you pay extra to call a cell phone. All right. Here we pay for incoming cell phone calls, and everybody pays the same amount to call a cell phone. When is it going to reach the stage where there isn't this premium on wireless communication? And why is that premium there in the first place?
People seem happy paying for it. I mean, it's...
People seem happy with all kinds of things that are wrong. But, you know, they're wire communication. You just as easily have a premium for using a wire because it's finite. You can only fit a certain number of conversations in a wire, and then it's full. But wireless, it's everywhere.
I know.
There's limits to the bandwidth or to the spectrum. But is it really worthy of charging extra these days?
These days, probably not. And a lot of people actually only have a wireless device. I don't even have a landline.
And that's why they pay more, you know, because a lot of people have this. Everybody's paying the premium. It's never going to go away unless people start.
If I didn't have to pay as much for the cell phone, I would probably get a landline. It's much more convenient to have one, but the cell phone costs enough where I'm not into paying any more for phone service.
It's also annoying when you call somebody in a different country and you don't know if you're calling a cell phone or a regular phone, and you wind up paying a lot more than you think you're going to pay because you're calling a mobile phone. It doesn't make much sense to me, especially when so many people are walking around with these things these days. I just think the technology has reached a stage where the prices can be leveled out.
You know what doesn't know?
What doesn't know?
Doesn't know if you're calling a cell phone or not overseas. Is at least some, I'm not going to promise all, payphones seem to charge the same amount for any destination in a given country.
Well, we had an interesting discussion about this earlier. The yellow handset phones that you see all around the place now, the yellow handset payphones, they're actually using a company, I believe it's called Phone One or something.
Very confusing.
It's not that confusing, actually. I think it's because AT&T no longer carries coin traffic. Is that true everywhere now? They don't carry coin traffic anyplace? I'm pretty sure it is. But if you see a payphone with a yellow receiver, that means that they use this company called Phone One, and you can call overseas for much lower prices than we've been accustomed to. It used to cost something like, what, $3-$4 for the first minute? And putting all those quarters in, or dimes, or whatever, it took forever. Now it's something like a quarter for a minute, or a dollar for 10 minutes, or something a lot more reasonable like that. Now, how certain are you that this little trick works?
I'm not certain at all, but I... because you said on our email list that payphones were now affordable to call overseas, relatively speaking.
So I went and tried a few phones in my neighborhood. I didn't actually want to talk to anyone overseas, so I just dialed and listened to what the rate was and then didn't pay it and hung up.
Uh-huh.
And the few phones I tried were either a quarter for the first minute or 3 minutes for a dollar. And then I was more curious about this, so I started dialing numbers that I knew to be mobile numbers overseas and was quoted the same rates. So it's kind of interesting.
And you're absolutely certain those are mobile phones that you were dialing?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Can I ask what country this was? Maybe
this was Dutch numbers.
Okay. Well,
which is much, much, much cheaper than what I found calling the U.S.,
uh-huh.
which we mentioned on one of the previous shows. But the issue also came up of phone cards that use VoIP to make phone calls internationally. And I definitely wasn't using that. I was being charged about a euro a minute or so, both in Amsterdam and Berlin, with you know, just using standard public telephone cards.
Mm-hmm.
But, Bernie, do you have any more details about the cards that use VoIP?
Well, they're available almost all phone stores and convenience stores. Anywhere to sell stuff, practically, you can buy these cards in Europe. And they're usually country-specific. Like, you can only call from one destination country to a specific you can only call from one origination country to a specific destination country. Like one in Germany, it'll only work calls from Germany to the U.S., for instance. But it's pretty cheap. It's just a few cents a minute, and you can use them at, like, your hotel phone or something, and it's typically a toll-free call in that country. And it just works reasonably well, and it's cheap.
All right. I actually had a little bit of a hard time finding phone cards, and it was probably more because of the language barrier than anything else. But I found tons and tons of prepaid SIM cards for GSM phones, but it was much harder to track down phone cards for public telephones. And I actually ended up having to go to the post office in Berlin to get one, and they asked me, one of the post offices in Berlin asked me, you know, international or domestic, and I said international, and it was a euro a minute or so.
See, now, when I bought one of these cards with the chips on them a few years ago in Amsterdam, I was charged quite reasonable rates to call the States. It was cheaper than a lot of other services that I had access to. It was fine, so... Maybe the Germans are more of a ripoff than the Dutch, or maybe I just got lucky. Although I certainly didn't try to do anything, but
I could have been using crappy phone cards because I think what is the phone company there, KPN or something?
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's one of the phone companies.
Yeah, I was using their chip cards as well, and same deal. So it was around a euro a minute or so. But anyway, okay.
Well, we had a lot of feedback to last week's show where we played with a different technology for the first time. And we're going to go into that. We're going to try and play with it a little bit more, too. I understand that the personal computer people are not here, so that means we are going to be on for another hour, which is good news for us. And, of course, we'll announce on the hour that the personal computer people are not in this week, and we'll be in next week, hopefully. Here's a letter that somebody sent us concerning the program having to do with Skype, the program that we used last week. I enjoy listening to Off the Hook and Off the Wall every week, and even subscribe to 2600. Wow. In your last radio show, you talked about VoIP and Skype. Can I call it VoIP? Is that acceptable?
I accept it.
All right. I have some additional information. You can change the number that appears if someone calls you with Skype by buying your own VoIP number. I believe this costs... I don't know where this person is writing from. I was writing from the Netherlands, so okay. These question marks probably mean euros or euro cents. This costs 30 euro cents per number. I believe.
No, it's more than that, I think.
Maybe 30 euros per number?
Maybe.
Okay. Instead of a number like zero zeros and 123456, it'll show plus 31 and then the regular phone number. First two digits being the country code, which will be plus one for the U.S., and the rest is like a regular landline number. Once you have a number like this, other people can call you on your VoIP number. There's also a lesser-known program which offers more or less the same as Skype. It's called VoIP Buster. Go to www.voipbuster.com. The quality is the same as Skype. You can get your own VoIP number for free, and you can make free calls to landlines. That's what I do like best about this program, the free calls. And if you download from www.voipstunt.com, VoIPstunt.com, you can even call from the U.S. to European countries, vice versa, for free. Last week I bought a new SpeedTouch 716 modem, which includes two RJ11 ports for VoIP phone calls. My ADSL provider gave me two free VoIP numbers, each with its own answering machine. Currently, I can only make calls between other users from the same ADSL provider, and other people can call me on my VoIP number. In the coming weeks, it'll also be possible to make outbound calls through this modem. The thing is that by using Skype, VoIPBuster, and others, you end up having multiple VoIP numbers, all on which you can make and receive calls. And SpeedTouch also announced a modem like the 716, which includes two SCART ports in order to receive TV signals through the ADSL modem / router. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Keep on visiting my country. Signed, Ed from the Netherlands. Thanks very much, Ed. Boy, I can just imagine people out there listening to all this who just want to make a phone call. It sounds really complicated, but it really isn't, is it?
Skype is actually very easy to use. And those other two services, I just took a quick glance at, and they just seem a little bit shadier, so I didn't really bother signing up or anything. But they could be great.
Uh-huh. Shady, you think, huh?
I like Skype.
Uh-huh.
There's a multitude of services, all of which offer pretty similar features. Some are based on more open standards than others, but from the end user's perspective, they're all pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.